Come the neat thing with all the manifestations, how wonderful was that? Because Isaiah and Esther's manifestations were right in line with the teaching.
Yeah.
And what a testimony that is for the person who's getting ready to do the teaching, to have somebody give confirmation that the teaching that I've prepared is what he designed, you know. It's neat. Anybody can share our Father's word. The question is, are you going to be sharing what he wants to share? You know, you can come to a meeting. What would you like to talk about? And so we can go talk about whatever we want. But the idea is, what would he like to talk about? And Isaiah and Esther's teaching was, or their manifestations were right in there. When I was a kid, and even when I was an adult, if I heard a scary noise, you know what I did? I covered myself under the blankets. For some reason, I thought that was my force field. Nothing could touch me. If there was a grizzly bear or something in the room, do you think, oh, the grizzly bear would be like, I was going to eat him, but, oh man, he pulled sheets over his head. I can't get past that. Or if there was a crocodile under the bed and he was going to eat me, and I'll, oh, he pulled a sheet over his head. Can't do that. Oh, well, you know, that's just my kryptonite. But for some reason, I felt that, well, if I pull my sheets over my head, I'm protected. I felt like it. You guys ever feel that?
Yeah.
What you know is funny is kids feel that way, and you know what? Parents and adults do the same thing. It's just different stuff. We do things, we do certain things that make us feel comfortable. Now I'm comfortable. Other thing I used to have is I had to go to the bathroom. I made sure as I got out of bed, I jumped out real quick because there couldn't have been somebody underneath the bed who could grab me.
Probably your brother.
So I was like, oh man, so here's all these things that I did, that I did this problem solving, how to protect myself. And if I didn't do those things, I would have never survived. You guys, but your prophecies and your manifestations are right in there. And the watch the teaching. And their manifestations, how old are you? You're 9? Going to be 10? 7?
6.
6 going to be 7. They are the temple of the living God. He lives inside them. And he gets, does he get more glory from children or from an adult person behind a pulpit who's been teaching seminary for 60 years? It's kids, children. It's wonderful. How neat is that? Just like Samuel. I guess what we're going to be learning about tonight, guys. Samuel is how you would say it in Hebrew. Isn't that neat? There's another neat thing that I was writing. I was giving a guy a compliment. I'm not just giving him a compliment. He blessed me. He delivered me at a time in my life. And my father told me that I should write back and thank him for what he did. And one of the problems, one of the good things, one of the bad things about storytellers. Well, one good thing about storytellers is we're a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. A bad thing about storytellers, not always accurate. But we're fun. It's a great story. So there are some people like my father, he's very accurate. And so being fun isn't necessarily good. But what I was doing, I got reproved. It was a good approval. I was writing, oh, and then this happened, and this happened. Oh, I'm writing this thing. I was just like Ralphie on the Christmas story. You know, when she gives him an A, plus. And I walk off, and I was congratulating me how I was recalling this miracle that happened in my life. And I came back and I looked what I typed. I was like, that is brilliant. And then all of a sudden, this thought came through. Is it accurate? Yeah. And I started like, well, that's kind of accurate. But it sounds really good. That's what I was thinking. And you know what happened? But the neat thing was, Yahweh communicated to me. He says, Aaron, you can embellish and exaggerate to make a story really good. But when they're reading that story and I'm standing beside them, do you think that I'm going to witness and say, amen, that's what happened?
No.
He goes, if you are honest and you write what I tell you to write, I'll be in the room when they read it. And if you are obedient, guess what I'll do? I'll say, amen. And they will know, and they'll know, just like a prophecy. You know what?
Now.
Oh man! So what I was learning is but anyways, but we're going to start off in the book of Samuel, 1 Samuel, and we're needing a lot of adult readers tonight.
First Samuel.
Well, it's just neat about what sounds good, what's appealing, itching ears, what sounds good. Yahweh talking about itching ears in 2 Timothy. And what is right? And what we should come back down to, like an accountant or an auditor, what happened? What is true?
Just wait. No.
Okay, I'll go do it. I'll lose track if you guys ask me questions while I'm talking. I'm not a good multitasker like some of the moms in here. Okay, 1 Samuel, the 2nd chapter. Now, before we go there, what happened was a woman named Hannah could not have a baby. And she went to Yahweh. And she was blessed with Samuel, is how you would say his name. Anybody know anything? Samuel was a Nazarite. Did you guys know what a Nazarite is? They didn't cut their hair. It was a part of their covenant. Samson was a Nazarite too. And that's why when he cut his hair, he separated his covenant. That's like if somebody was married and they decided to take off their ring. It's like breaking the covenant at a time. So Sam, you can imagine, he had very long hair. But probably his big dreads. Might look like a Rastafarian a little bit. But anyways, Samuel was given into the house of Eli to serve Yahweh. Now, Eli is a priest of Israel. And now, if somebody would read... Okay, we're going to start off in verse 22. So, Eli is the high priest in Israel. Okay? Samuel's a young boy who was serving in the house. And verse 22. Now, Eli... I'll read this part. Eli was very old. But he used to hear all that his sons did unto all Israel, and how even they lay with the women who did service at the opening of the tent of meeting. Do you guys know what the tent of meeting was? There was a tent outside of Israel. And whenever Yahweh wanted to have a meeting with Israel or with Moses, a cloud would come down. And it was a very special tent. And Yahweh said, it's time to have a meeting. Eli's sons were having sexual intercourse with girls at the opening of his... That's even worse than inside of a church. How bad are his kids? Mm-hmm. At the opening. Okay, now if somebody would read 23 through 36. Mom, why don't you read 23 through 36.
So he said to them, "Wherefore should ye do such things as these? For I keep hearing of your wicked doings from all these people. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I do hear, leading into the transgression the people of Yahweh. If one man sin against another, Yahweh will interpose. But if against Yahweh a man sin, who will intercede for him? But they hearken not unto the voice of their father, for Yahweh was pleased to put them to death. But the boy Samuel went on growing in stature and in favor, both with Yahweh and also with men. And there came a man of Yahweh unto Eli, and said unto him, Thus saith Yahweh, I did indeed reveal myself unto the house of thy father, when they were in Egypt as servants unto the house of Pharaoh, choosing him out of all the tribes of Israel unto myself, to minister as priest, to offer upon mine altar, to perfume with incense, to bear an ephod before me. Therefore gave I unto the house of thy father all the altar flames of the sons of Israel. Wherefore have ye been kicking at my sacrifices and my presents, which I commanded to serve for a home, and shouldest have honored thy sons more than me, fattening yourselves with the first of every present of Israel before me? Hence the oracle of Yahweh, God of Israel, I said that thy house and the house of thy father should go to and fro in my presence unto time's age abiding. But now is the oracle of Yahweh, be it far from me. For them who honor me will I honor, but they who despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Lo, days are coming when I will hew off thine arm and the arm of the house of thy father, that there shall be no elder in thy house, but thou shalt descry distress at home in all that shall gladden Israel, and there shall not be an elder in thine own house all the days. But any man of thine whom I may not cut off from mine altar, it shall be to consume his eyes and grieve his soul. Howbeit all the multitude of thy house shall die by the sword of men. And this for thee is the sign which shall come upon thy two sons, upon Hophni and Phinehas. In one day shall they both of them die. And I will raise me up a faithful priest, according to that which is in my heart and in my soul will he do. Therefore will I build for him an assured house, and he shall go to and fro in the presence of mine anointed all the days. And it shall be that any that is left in thy house shall come bowing down to him for just a small coin of silver and for a cake of bread, and shall say, appoint me, I pray thee, to one of the priestly offices, that I may eat a morsel of bread.
Okay, so you can see Yahweh is very upset with Eli and Eli's sons. He says that Eli was honoring his sons more than he was Yahweh. And you can see what's neat is kind of like Dad's teaching also last week, is that he said, I told you in verse 30 that you would serve me forever. But you blew it. And the neat thing is that he said he's going to replace Eli with another guy, and then that person will serve him forever. What do you think that forever means? Forever. Unless the guy blows it.
Yeah.
That's like saying to any of us. Sometimes you go, oh, he said, I got it. Well, I got it. I can do whatever I want now, right? And then he did the same thing with Saul. He told Saul, your kingdom would have been forever, but you blew it. Now, in this case, you can imagine, here's Samuel, little kid. And when the priest comes home, you can imagine this is not necessarily good news. You're going to go, oh man, what's happening here? And so he went in 1 Corinthians 5, 6, and 7, we won't go there, but it says that a little leaven is a whole bread, or the whole lump, like yeast. And so 1 Corinthians 5, 6, and 7 says that we're to get rid of sin in our life. And somebody doesn't want to turn to you, say, you got to go out until you want to repent. A neat thing is that until my father did a teaching about Eli, I used to think he was just wicked, 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 wicked. What does the scripture say about Eli? It said in verse, we won't go there, but in verse 18, he judged Israel for 40 years. Who wrote that? Yahweh wrote that. And so, okay, so what was Eli's sin? He just honored his sons more. His sons were very wicked, but more than Yahweh. So, okay, so but he did raise Samuel. Samuel, as E.W. Bolger would say, he was the last judge and he was the first prophet of his kind. About it was a change of government. So he's the last judge. So you can imagine possibly with Eli, he might have thought that the next judge would be his sons.
Yeah.
It was Samuel, and the new prophet was coming. Did Samuel know what was going to happen to Eli? We don't necessarily know. We can imagine he might have known. But what did Yahweh tell Samuel? This is the sign. Both your sons are going to die in the same day. So you can imagine if you heard this, okay, if they die the same day, well, then we'll know. You guys, I have this every day. If that was Yahweh, then this happens, well, then I'll know that was him. So you can imagine, man, that guy was, who was this prophet? We don't know who the prophet was. And anytime the word says a man of Elohim, it means a prophet. Who was this guy? I don't know. We don't know where he came from. But did Samuel know that? We don't necessarily know. But chapter 3, I would think that Samuel would have known that
this is
his adopted father. You ever think about that? This is his adopted father is going to lose both of his sons, who are also priests. I would imagine that he'd probably hear this, but we don't necessarily know. In chapter 3, verse 11. Now what happens? In chapter 3, here's little Samuel, minding his own business. And you know what Yahweh does?
Samuel.
Here I am. Get back to bed. I'll spank your bottom. Samuel. He wasn't going to talk to Eli. Three times. Samuel. And the neat thing was Eli did a great thing with Samuel. He said, if Yahweh comes against us, speak, for your servant is listening. That's great. It wasn't like Saul. It wasn't like Ahab trying to kill him. Kill him! Get rid of him! Samuel goes, here I am. Speak, for your servant is listening. Do you know what Yahweh tells him? Everything that I prophesied over Eli is going to happen. And there's no turning back now. Nineveh, there was a turning back. They had a chance. Hezekiah, there was a turning back. So that even after this prophecy was happening, Eli could have possibly turned back. But then here's Samuel, and he goes, all this stuff's going to happen. You tell Samuel this, or Eli this, you tell Eli that. And here's poor little Eli going, oh, you're going to tell your adopted father that both of his sons are going to die one day. And there won't be anybody old in the household forever. You want to tell your dad that? I wouldn't want to tell my dad that. But the neat thing was, I don't want to go off too far with Eli, but then Eli says to Samuel the next day, what did Eli do? Or Samuel, he got really busy. He got busy work. He went over to the house of Yahweh. Then Eli had to go find him. I can imagine Samuel probably didn't want to talk to him. Eli says, what did he say to you? And he goes, tell me everything he said. And if you don't, basically he says, all the horrible things that he told you, let them be on you, and even more if you don't tell me what he said. And Samuel goes, I don't want that to happen to me. So Samuel tells him the truth, tells him what Yahweh said. Yahweh said it's going to happen.
Tell him the truth.
Do you think Samuel wanted to do that?
Yeah.
What a beginning for Samuel. This is his father, for the most part. And Eli honored his, it was a new beginning, a neat beginning for Samuel too, but Samuel's tests are not over. The beginning of Samuel's ministry was, will you choose your father, Eli, in my opinion, his adopted father, over me, Yahweh. And Samuel was honored. He chose Yahweh and told Eli all that was going to happen. You know, that's the beginning of his ministry. Did Samuel need to produce faith when he got started? Do you think your life's hard? This is the beginning of his ministry. Oh boy, is this what it's going to be like the whole time? Oh boy, I have to call in sick for work. But you can imagine, but Samuel didn't want to approve him. But Samuel was forced to produce faith immediately. Chapter 4, verse 10 and 11. Okay, Isaiah, you were volunteered last time. Why don't you read chapter 4, verse 10 and 11.
Okay. So the Philistines forgot that Israel was smitten, and they fled every man to his home. And the slaughter became exceedingly great. And then fell of Israel 30,000 footmen. And the ark of Elohim was taken. And the two sons of Eli were slain, Hophni and Phinehas.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And how great is that to have guys reading a 1901 translation? I recently learned that our church fathers, like Benjamin Franklin, when they were 4 years old, they read the entire Bible from front to back, the Geneva Bible. You guys are in good company. It's time to start raising the standards, right? All right. Excellent job, all of you guys. What happened? The sign happened. Hophni and Phinehas died one day. After that, verse 18. Malai, would you read verse 18?
And it came to pass when he mentioned the ark of Yahweh that he fell from his seat backwards at the side of the gate, and his neck brake, and he died, for old was the man and heavy, and he had judged Israel for 40 years.
Now Eli, right? Then what happened? Hophni and Phinehas die. Now Eli dies. He falls back. Now what happens after that? Elijah, would you read verse 20, please?
19.
No, verse 20.
And about the time of her death, the woman that stood by her said, do not fear, for to a son hast thou given birth. But she neither answered nor regarded.
Okay, then what happened? I guess we could have read 18. But what happened? Eli's daughter-in-law dies. Eli dies. Eli's two sons die. The Ark of the Covenant is taken. And Eli's daughter-in-law dies. This is like one family. And in my opinion, this is like Samuel's family. This is an adopted family. Do you think Samuel knew his uncles? I mean, this is my words. These were not his uncles, but they was like an adopted uncles. Golly, Hophni's dead. Phinehas is dead. Phinehas' wife is dead. Eli's dead. The Ark of the Covenant's gone. And 30,000 Israelites are dead. Golly, you can imagine. Pearl Harbor. An attack on U.S. soil. Approximately 2,500 Americans died. The World Trade Center, 9/11, 2001, approximately 3,000 Americans died. And this account here, after with Hophni Phinehas, 30,000. 10 times 9/11 happened. Can you imagine? This is the beginning of Samuel's story. This is how his story starts. What? You think you've got a tough beginning. You think you've got a dysfunctional family. Oh my goodness. By the way, anybody use the word dysfunctional? They're deceiving themselves. Every family is dysfunctional. They're implying that one family is functional. Well, that would have been Adam and Eve before the garden was... There will be functional families when Christ comes back. But every family is dysfunctional. But this is the beginning of Samuel. Now here's Samuel going to go, man, look what happened. Now chapter 1 Samuel chapter 8. 295.
I like this chapter.
So now Samuel, and it goes, not Yahweh would not let one of his words hit the ground. Samuel was established as a prophet. He's going to and fro. Chapter 8, verse 1. Would somebody read, one of the kids read that for me?
I will.
Alright.
It came to pass when Samuel was old that he appointed his sons judges to Israel.
Now, does this make sense?
Yeah.
We have the books of Judges. We have Joshua judges Ruth. And then we have Samuel was a judge, okay? Right? He appoints some judges. Why does it say Samuel was old? This Hebrew word for old, this is a theological word book of the Old Testament. It's just some interesting things about the word old that is here. It says, it's just some interesting things. It says, leadership must be relinquished when you get to this point of the age. It also says, do you know how old the Levites were when they stopped serving? 50. I didn't know that. How old was Eli when he died? He was 90. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because it said when he died, he was judged 40 years. It also says that if somebody lived to be 80, that he was, let me see here, he was very, very old. So here's all these scriptures, but it starts explaining these things. And it's saying that, let me see, okay, now we're going to read verse 2. Now somebody read 2 and 3. No, we're going to read 2 through 5, please.
And the name of his firstborn son was Joel, and the name of his second, Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. Howbeit his sons walked not in his ways, but stooped to extortion and took bribes and perverted judgment. So then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came unto Samuel to Ramah and said unto him, lo, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now appoint for us a king to judge us like all the nations.
That's good. What's kind of interesting, my father, he's the one that pointed this out. Why did they need a king? Samuel's sons failed. I never noticed that. I thought it was wicked Israel until my dad pointed that out. And then what's interesting also, the theological word book of the Old Testament, this word old, says when you become this age, you're supposed to relinquish power. It's kind of interesting. So here's what they're saying. Is they're saying that Israel is actually saying, you're supposed to relinquish this power. Your sons are wicked. Now, they're not like Eli's sons. Fornications are not the same as this other. So they're extortion and bribes. Can you imagine poor Samuel? Do you think Samuel wanted his two sons to take over as judges? And here he was. Here he was. And Israel comes and... they say that your sons cannot be our judges. Do you think Samuel remembered what happened to Eli?
Mm-hmm.
Would Eli honor his sons more than Yahweh? Do you think that maybe he would be tempted to honor his sons anyways? Possibly, I don't know. But the interesting, when you start thinking about it, they're going to go, golly, he lost Eli, he lost Hophni and Phinehas, and then Phinehas' wife. And now what's happening? He's trying to set things up. I'm old, I'm ready to retire. And the people are supposed to take over the ministry? No, they're no good. What are we going to do now? And Samuel has to decide what to do. So what does Samuel do? He goes to Yahweh. And do you know what Yahweh says? They didn't reject you, they rejected me. We're going to appoint a king. But what does that mean if Samuel's going to appoint a king? Do you think that Samuel is going to be invited to his son's Thanksgiving feasts when he appoints a king? Probably not going to be the best friend of his sons after this. Talk about a tough thing. But will he honor Yahweh in this? And so what does he do? He appoints Saul. I mean, poor Samuel. And chapter 14, verse 3. Now, I want to kind of digress for just a second, but in chapter 14, verse 3, page 301. Melania, would you read verse 2 and 3? No, actually, you just read chapter 14, 3.
And
Ahijah,
the son of
Ahitub,
brother of Ichabod, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, was the priest of Yahweh in
Shiloh,
wearing the ephod, and the people knew not that Jonathan
had departed. So what? Ichabod. Ichabod means where's the glory? Ichabod was Phinehas' son. His mom named him Ichabod before she died. The glory is departed. What happened when Ichabod was born? His mom and his dad and his uncle and his grandpa died. The Ark of the Covenant was taken. And 30,000 people died. Have you guys ever heard of 9/11?
The
terrorist attack? I wasn't around during Pearl Harbor. You hear about it. Do you think that Ichabod's life could possibly have been a living testimony to everybody what happened to Israel? Mm-hmm. Why? Okay. Hey, how you doing? My name's Bob. My name is the glory's departed. Whoa, man. Bummer, dude. Come on, man. What really is your name? The glory's gone, dude. You're the priest? What's the story behind this? And then here's this whole thing. So Ichabod, what about Samuel? What about Samuel when he's going through his circuits? Every time you think that maybe whenever he saw Ichabod, poor Ichabod, what did Ichabod do? It didn't say he did anything wrong, did it? But every time Samuel would have saw possibly Ichabod, he's going, golly. I think about Tommy Crabb. There was a guy who used to teach the word. And now he's a living testimony of what I don't want to be like. And I'd be a fool to think that I won't end up like that if I don't practice godliness. Then think about it, here's Ichabod and Samuel. Samuel's going, golly, man, I can't be like Eli. And I bet you Samuel had a lot of temptation. I bet you Samuel had a great heart. I bet you he was just as lonely as anybody else. And here's Ichabod. Ichabod's grandpa died, dad died, mom died, uncle died. The Ark of the Covenant was taken. Where is the Ark of the Covenant? Oh, the Philistines have it. Why did the Philistines? Could you imagine that you could say, why does ISIS have the Ark of the Covenant? Oh, go ask Ichabod. Oh, great. Here we go again. But the night now in 1 Samuel, chapter 16. This is page 304. What happens next with Samuel? So Samuel goes in and Samuel meets Saul. And he goes, tonight you're going to eat with me. Saul goes, all right. He goes, and tomorrow I'll tell you what you want to know. But as far as your dad's donkeys, they've been taken care of. Ooh, I got goosebumps. This guy's a man of Elohim. The next day you're going to be the king. You're anointed. Did Saul want to be the king? No, he did not. Because when they went to look for him, and Yahweh chose him, and the tribe of Benjamin was chosen, this was chosen, and they go, where's Saul? And Yahweh goes, he's hiding in the closet. Can you imagine? They open up the closet. Oh, you're the king. I don't want to be the king. Are you sure about this? What happened to Saul? Okay, I'll be the king. He comes out, but what happens?
Sure.
When Saul first goes to war, do you know what he does? He gets angered because of the war that happens. And they said, one of the guys says that, that some of the Israelites did not want to go to war with him. He goes, we don't want to go to war with you. He goes, and the guy says to the Israelites, if all you pluck out your right eyes, then maybe we won't go to war. This is the beginning. And then all Israel was trembling. And you know what Saul did? He got very upset. And he went and slaughtered like an ox. And he said, so that will be done to every Israelite who does not go to war with me and with Samuel.
Oh, Samuel.
Isn't that neat? He didn't go to war without Samuel. When he got started, guess what happened? You think he won? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You go to Samuel was like the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark was taken. Take it! Samuel's the Ark. Wow. Take that box. I just wonder wherever Yahweh is. He's not in Jerusalem right now. And you are Yahweh's right now? In us. But then later on, what happened to Saul? He starts getting distracted. He starts doing wicked things. He starts giving the people what they want. In chapter 16, verse 1, would somebody read that for me?
I will. And Yahweh said unto Samuel, how long art thou going to pine for Saul, seeing that I have rejected him from being king over Israel?
The word pine means mourn. This is the same Hebrew word about what they would mourn. They were allowed to mourn for 7 days. In certain instances, they could mourn for 70 days. And even like, who was it? One of the guys died like in Korea or China. They had the professional wailers and the mourners. I made fun of that talk. I read about it today. The Israelites did the same thing. I didn't know that. Oh, whoops. They had professional mourners. They had wail. What's Samuel's problem? Okay, well, let's just take a walk in Samuel's sandals. He saw Eli die from rebellion. Hophni and Phinehas die because of rebellion. And he anointed Saul. And now Saul's rebellion. Is Saul going to turn? And here he is. He's mourning. Saul's going to think, God, are you kidding me? I'm tired of people being torn out of my life. What is Samuel going to do? What is he going to do? I'm so tired of this family being cut up and divided or whatever's going on, I can imagine. I'm just trying to think about it. And here's what is he going to do? And Yahweh goes, how long are you going to mourn over him? I'm going to pick them anyway, Samuel. And then he goes, I'm going to have you go anoint somebody else. And what does Samuel say? I can't. Saul will kill me. And then Yahweh says, I'm going to pick somebody after my own heart. It's not going to be on his outward appearance. But here's what is Samuel going to do? He has another choice, another hard choice. He started off with Eli. Would he be Yahweh's friend or would he be Eli's friend? Oh, boy. You're the bearer of bad news all over again. And then what happens?
His sons.
He chooses Yahweh again, and Yahweh chooses David.
Yep.
Samuel's story is a success story, guys.
Yeah.
Jesus is complete success. I cannot relate to what that guy's been through at all. Not even a little bit. I've never had anybody I know die, or been a part of 30,000 people being taken away, and then the Ark of the Covenant's going. And here's Samuel. Whose house does Samuel live in? It's your family, Samuel. Hophni, Phinehas, and Eli. Now the Ark of the Covenant's got 30,000 people. Can you imagine Samuel trying to walk down the street? And everybody's going. Oh man! Anyways, there goes the storyteller. But Samuel's story is a complete success. Now David is anointed. It's the beginning of the Kings. 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 1. 3:32. I'll go ahead and read it. Page 2 Samuel 12. So basically, Samuel passed the tests. He had a couple huge tests. He was the one that picked Saul. He was the one that picked his sons to be judges. Now he's going to pick David. Oh, man. No, David's king. And then Samuel goes to sleep. Man, do you think that guy's going to be rewarded?
Yeah.
When Samuel came to Bethlehem to anoint David, you know what they said when Samuel came to town? Peaceably, do you come? Do you come in peace? Do you come in peace? Oh, he said he comes in peace. Oh, it's okay. He represents Yahweh, and Yahweh was not really happy with Israel at the time because they were rebellion over and over again. Hey, you know what, guys? We can relate because we're in rebellion every single day. I don't want to obey. I don't want to submit. I don't want to keep my mouth shut. I don't want to do these things. We can relate. Chapter 12, verse 1. So then Yahweh sent Nathan the prophet unto David, who therefore came unto him and said unto him, King David committed adultery. King David committed murder. And then he had other people killed. Then he tried to cover it up. Kind of sounds like the beginning of Eli, doesn't it? Before Samuel, Yahweh sent a prophet to Eli. Your sons are having fornicating in front of the tent of meeting. What the heck? Does that sound like spiritual warfare or what? And the prophet comes to David. Nathan, to me, is the same as Samuel, is the same as the first prophet. It's Yahweh. Yahweh came to David and goes, what are you doing? And the neat thing is if you read after all these things, and there's a neat movie, I have a movie with David. And I'll actually say Yahweh's name, and it's great. It's done like 1980s or 70s. But the thing was, is this part of the movie, when Nathan says these things, in the this is not in the Bible, it's not in Yahweh's word, but it's in the movie. When he says these things, Joab takes his knife out to kill him. You can imagine, this is King David. Who the heck are you? What did David do? Oh, now we're going to read verse 12. Okay, he did all these things. Verse 11. Thus saith Yahweh, behold me raising up over thee calamity, over thine own house, and I'll take thy wives before thine eyes and give them unto a neighbor, and he will lie with thy wives in the front of the sun, or in the eyes of the sun. For thou didst in secret, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun. David thought he was doing things in secret, but Yahweh knew about it. And David said unto Nathan, I have sinned against Yahweh. But David, unlike Eli, he repented. Do you think that King David ever heard about Uncle Eli through Samuel? Do you think that possibly Samuel would have been talking to David about, here's what you got to do, here's what you got to do. David, when Saul was trying to kill David, where did David go? He went to Samuel. Do you think Samuel could have come back and go, David, I know exactly what you go. Samuel, you're old. You don't know anything. I'm a kid. You're old. Back in the like kids today. Back in the 19 somethings. But here's David or Samuel goes, I know what it's like. I appointed my sons to be judges. I appointed Saul to be king. I know what it's like. And I didn't reject my sons. I didn't reject Saul. They rejected Yahweh. So here could have been all these things about David being coached up. And what did David do? He passed the test. Because in my opinion, David would have fell down upon his knees. And he would have said, I have sinned against Yahweh. And a neat thing is in Matthew 6, we'll just have the adults go there because we're just going to flip there quickly. In Matthew 6, I'll find a page for the kids. Matthew 6:33. It's 6:18, excuse me. But Yahweh through Yahushua is telling people, when you give your rewards, when you do your things, when you pray and you give things, or you give a prophecy, when you do something kind, Yahweh says, don't do it in front of people to get their pats on the back.
Yeah.
Don't go do things so that they can say how great you are, how good of a speaker you are, what a winner you are, what a great person. Look at all these followers. He goes, do these things in secret. And if you were going to fast, don't go out and let everybody know, I'm fasting. He goes, you got your reward. You got it. And when you're going to be giving, don't go broadcasting, go, aha! I'm more generous than all of you. How do you know? I got a billboard right there. Aaron's generous. See it? Yahweh would say, you have your reward. In verse 18, verse 17, but when thou art fasting, anoint thy head and wash thy face, and thou do not appear unto men to be fasting, but to the Father who is in secret. In David's life, he did things in secret, but he forgot. Yahweh sees the things in secret. When I was a kid, I felt like if I pulled the blankets over my head, I got a force field. Did you know Yahweh could see me under my blankets?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it made me feel like, when we sin, we have a tendency to feel, it's in the closet. Nobody can see what I'm doing. Really? You really can't? Caden, when he was a little, when he was like 3 years old, somehow I got like a piece of candy. And he wasn't supposed to have any candy. And he was in a corner. And I could hear it crackling. I'm standing behind him, I'm like, really? Really? He's like, really? What do you got, Caden? Turned around, I'm like, busted! I'm like, you didn't think that I saw this whole thing happening? But you know, I laugh at Caden. I do the same thing every single day. The thing that's supposed to make us different is get down on your knees, your hands and knees, and say, I'm sorry. There is no secret place. It's all about you. And what I believe what Samuel and David did that was better than everybody else is they acknowledged there is no secret place. And there is no fellowship other than Yahweh. It's people rejecting Yahweh. And if Adam would have just chose Yahweh, then maybe all the rest of this stuff wouldn't have happened. So you can imagine Judges chapter 9, 272 in the Old Testament. Chapter 9 of Judges. There's a guy named Gideon. Anybody ever heard of Gideon? You ever heard of Gideon's Bible? There were people that are called the Gideons, and one of their ministries is they would put Bibles in hotels. They would go to like every hotel and try to have a Bible in every hotel room. Because of the Gideons, now you know almost any hotel in the United States, and guess what you can find in there? A Bible. Now things are kind of changing a little bit, but we should pull the Bibles out and thank the hotels. Thank you for the Bibles. So that's what the Gideons did. But there was a judge named Gideon. Yahweh chose him, not because he was the biggest and the smartest. He was from the tribe of Benjamin. He was one of the weakest. And Yahweh goes, I don't need your abilities. I need a heart. I need a heart. David's heart. And they rose up, and Yahweh delivered them out of the hands of the Midian. 300 took on 135,000. Killed them. Got them all. Yahweh won. Isn't that great? Isn't that neat? After Gideon, he had 70 sons, or I think 72 sons. One of the sons of a concubine took all the sons and killed them, all of them, on one rock. Slaughtered them so that he could be a king. Do you think that's how Yahweh would want the next person to be a king or a judge? To murder Gideon's sons? Do you think that honored his father? No. His name was Abimelech. Abimelech, Ab means father. Melech means king. My father the king. That's his name. Now in verse 52, he's a warrior. Like a Navy SEAL. 52. And Abimelech came. Mom, would you read 52 through 54?
And Abimelech came in as far as the tower and fought against it. And so came near as far as the entrance of the tower to burn it with fire. And a certain woman cast an upper millstone upon the head of Abimelech and break in pieces his skull. Then called he hastily unto the young man bearing his armor, and said unto him, draw thy sword and put me to death, lest they say of me, a woman slew him. So his young man thrust him through, and he died.
Okay, so Abimelech, a mighty warrior with a big ego.
Everybody knows he was killed by a woman.
What did he say? Stab me quick, because I don't want anybody to know that a woman killed me. That's embarrassing. He's a warrior. I was a warrior. I died in battle. I was cutting down thousands of men. Did anybody ever find out that Abimelech was killed by a woman with a rock?
Yes. Down here.
Oh my goodness. Oh, poor Abimelech. Abimelech's story. Everybody in every hotel room could find out what happened to Abimelech. Oh no, he goes, kill me so nobody finds this out. Shh. What happens next? Verse 55. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, They went their way, every man to his own place. Thus did Elohim requite. Requite, if you look back, footnote at the bottom, means bring back. Because there are people with Abimelech. Like even today in the United States, you go, wicked Obama, wicked Obama, wicked Obama. Obama is just a part of people that are voting him in. Obama is going to steal from our neighbors to give to people. Covet not your neighbor's goods. Love your neighbor as yourself. If you're voting for somebody saying, take his stuff and give to me, we're in sin. But what did Yahweh do? Not only did Abimelech go, but Yahweh requited the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father in slaying his 70 brethren. And all the wickedness also of the men of Sichem did Elohim requite or bring back upon their own head. And so he brought upon the curse of Jotham, son of Jerubbaal. So he brought back, so all the people that are in with Abimelech, they died too. But the question is, did Abimelech know that he was not the author of his biography? Abimelech believed he was writing an autobiography. Ah, this is who I am, this is what I did, my victories. And if you're writing an autobiography, like President Obama, do you think he's going to tell us of any of his losses? No, there's no losses. My only loss is I'm so humble. Abimelech was writing his own autobiography, but he forgot. Yahweh is writing the biography. Mm-hmm. And Yahweh remembered everything, didn't he? Yeah. And the funny thing is that King David is not that far after Abimelech. And Yahweh talks to Joab and reproves Joab, trying to be very smart. Haven't you ever heard about Abimelech? Because Uriah gets killed. But yeah, everybody knew about Abimelech. How about Nimrod? You guys ever heard of Nimrod?
No.
Nimrod was a mighty warrior. Now his name is a put down. He thought he was going to build this big tower. And then at the 10 pointed out, which was neat, this is not in the word, but it was Josephus. Josephus wrote that he believed that he was going to build a tower big enough so that if Yahweh, the Tower of Babel, if Yahweh flooded it again, he wouldn't be able to get as high as this tower. At least that's what the Israelites believed. That's not in the word, but he built this Tower of Babel. What happened to Nimrod? Yahweh changed all their languages so nobody knew what they were talking about. Nobody could communicate.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you say? Huh? One guy knows Japanese, one's Arapaho. What the heck? And nobody could get anything. That's what they do. Oh, okay. And Yahweh's like, wow, you guys are real tough. Man, that was a tough one. He just changed all the programming. But who wrote Nimrod's? Nimrod was not writing an autobiography. Yahweh is writing a biography. Now, how about this one? How about Goliath? Can you imagine the title of Goliath's biography? Goliath. 10.5 feet tall. A warrior from my youth. Even King Saul knew that, didn't he? No. Shh, you stole my punchline. What would Goliath, the title of his autobiography? Die in a glorious battle. What was Yahweh's title to his biography? Autobiography means you did it yourself. You're writing your own story. A biography means somebody else is going to write about you. Did you know Yahweh's going to write about us? All of us? All those secret places? Goliath writes, Goliath dies a glorious death. Ha 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 ha. What did Yahweh write? Killed by a little boy in a duel he chose. Oh, I'm humiliated. Oh, did anybody ever find out about Goliath being killed by a little boy after he challenged a little boy to a duel? Yeah, everybody does. He's humiliated. Can you imagine Goliath? I can imagine Goliath's family making up rules and laws. Oh, that's not really what happened. How about Pharaoh of Egypt? Pharaoh of Egypt, autobiography. Remembered forever as a victorious king. And conquered Yahweh, God of the Hebrews. What did Yahweh write? Drove his chariot into the sea and drowned. That's it! That's what happened to Pharaoh. Yeah, he drowned. Nimrod's biography. How about Herod? Herod in the New Testament, after he kills James, John's brother, he goes and gives a speech, and they go, this is not a voice of a man, this is a voice of an Elohim. Herod, you can imagine he's thinking, oh, I can't wait for my autobiography. Herod, the voice of an Elohim. What did Yahweh write? Eaten by worms. Man! Eaten by worms? And so something like it might have been an intestinal thing where his guts just fell out of him. It was really disgusting. But the story of all this is Samuel and David remembered that Yahweh is writing a biography on all of our lives. And all of us are going to mess up. And all of us are going to have trials. And all of us are going to have these temptations and weaknesses. The deal is that if we remember, if we can reconcile things back to where we're going, we're going to Zion, the mountain, paradise. And Yahweh's going to reward us for every obedient act. And if we can remember that nothing can be taken that He cannot restore. Nothing can be taken. And there's going to be tough times with all of us. And we can look back and we can remember the lessons of Eli. Sorry, Elijah. Sorry about that. The lessons.
Elijah,
that's right. Oh, mighty man of El. Hophni, Phineas, and poor old Ichabod. Can you imagine Ichabod? What did he? I didn't do anything wrong. Sure, the glory's departed. Thanks a lot, Ichabod. And then Abimelech. Hiding under the covers does make us feel like we're safe. And sometimes all of us have to deal with it, and I'm guilty of it. Sometimes I got to confront myself out in the open. You can see me! He can see me! I can't do that wicked stuff! Stuff goes through my mind, and I got to confess it out loud. I don't want you to write this thing out. And I'll confess things out loud, going, he can still see me. Somebody's watching me. Would you do that if everybody was watching you?
No.
Would you be eating your boogers if everybody was watching you?
No.
Yahweh and Yahushua are watching Aaron when he's a little kid eating his boogers, and they're like, dude, that is disgusting. Nobody can see this. Actually, we can't see it. But we can remember, it is a biography, and each day we can choose. We get to choose each day. Nothing can be taken that can't be restored. Can you imagine Nathan, the prophet? Do you think Nathan, who was this guy? We don't know a whole lot about him. We know he was David's, probably one of David's best friends. Do you think David's life was or Nathan's life was torn when he's going to have to go to David? As far as we know, David's going to be put to death. Do you think prophet Nathan knew about Eli? How about the sons of Aaron when they brought strange fire? You think Nathan knew about that? Oh man, this does not look good. David, what are you doing, man? But it turned. Write your victory. Write it. It's a never-ending story. Write your victory. We're gonna and think about it. We're writing one right now. What will we be reading about later on in life? I have a theory. That when we go to paradise, everybody's going to have their own biography. There's going to be billions and billions and billions of biographies. There's going to be a library we're going to get to read forever. Let's read about Wendy Cunningham's biography. The ups and downs of Wendy Cunningham. And here's other people reading going, Wendy, don't do it! Don't do it! Woo! Wendy, oh, I knew you could do it. Here's Wendy. Aaron, don't do it! Aaron, come on, dude. Didn't you learn the last time that you can imagine somebody reading my biography going, that's my own opinion, but you could be reading just like we did King David. Here's David about these biographies. The war's not over. The book's not over. And write your victory and show everybody. And remember that we're choosing Yahweh. Okay. We thank you, Father, for your words. We thank you for my family who's here. We thank you for the Royals for winning tonight. And we thank you for all of us for strength. We know all of us have dirty bath water. All of us need help. And there's nothing really unique about any one of our weaknesses, only that we need you. We thank you for helping us each day get down on our hands and knees. Just like my father's teaching last week. Hezekiah started wailing against the wall, crying out and how bad he wanted it. I thank you for helping us cry out for your fellowship. For your fellowship, for the peace of that passes understanding to be replaced. We thank you that you wash us of all impurity. And what makes us very unique in this body, with part of the sacred secret, is that if He is faithful and just to forgive us and absolve us of all of our sins, if we repent and we confess our sins, we can start all the way over. And we thank you that we can live that day. And what matters is not whether people value us, whether people follow us. It's only how we look in your eyes. And if we can reconcile everything back to that, we will win this race each day. We thank you for all that you've done through us. We thank you for the men and women that have gone before us so we can learn from their lives. and even David, his ups and his downs, and Samuel's trials. And we thank you for the words we're about to hear. My sons and my daughters, know that I do not look at the baggage in your life, and I do not grow weary because I can't drag you through. But you look at your own situations, and you go, I cannot move because there's too much. I am not limited by what is in your life. I am only limited on your obedience to walk forward. I don't ask you to understand everything. And I've called you time and time and time again. Just come forth. All of you have been in a position, in a situation where you're stuck in a rut, and there's nothing unique about it. If you open the word that I put in blood, written in ink, 6,000 years of trials and errors of people learning, people stuck in ruts, and I was always there waiting upon them. All I ask you to do is turn your eyes to me. Like Nebuchadnezzar did after 7 years, he looked up when I was there waiting. And it wasn't like I just appeared in Nebuchadnezzar after 7 years. I was there waiting for him for 7 years. So was I waiting for Aaron for 12 years to lead one person into speaking in tongues. I'm waiting for you each day to victory. I'm waiting to wash you clean. I'm waiting for you to conquer and slay the dragon. I'm waiting for you to be the hero and to be the heroine. I do not see what you see. I see a winner. That's what I see, and I see my son inside you. And as you hear my words, and as you study my words, my son grows stronger each day, just as a baby inside of a mother's womb, growing, and the heartbeat growing, and growing, and growing, until the new man rips out of the old man, and something new opens up. And that's what I look for each day. And I want you to know that each day I give you a new chance. It's like a whole other story. Each day, start over. You don't have to understand everything, and don't look behind you. Look to the front. Look to the future where we're going. Look where we're going. You'll be rewarded for everything. I'm cheering you on. I'm cheering your name. My son is with me. We're standing in the stands cheering your name. You can do it. You can do it. And we're not saying those things to set you up for failure. We're saying those things because you will win this race. You will win and dominate. So confront your feelings. Your biggest enemy is in between your ears. And reconcile everything to my word and the Ruach which is within you. And I will give you the peace that passes all understanding. And you don't have to understand it. Just guard that peace and go, I'm going to go wherever the peace is so that I can stay in the presence of my Father. That's all I need. Like a flower that needs the sunshine. A flower who had legs that would walk wherever it had to go to stay in the sunshine so it could keep blooming. Be my sunflowers, but instead of turning towards the sun, grow legs and chase me down wherever I go. Because I go walking, just as my son did with Peter and James and John. They said, where are you going? I said, come on, let's go. Let's go on this adventure. You don't want a boring life stuck in a rut. You really don't. You spend time, money, hours, thousands of dollars over your lifetime has been spent reading about adventures. It's time to stop reading and listening to adventures. And it's time to start being an adventure and living your own.